and welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can also go to our own website, www.nagb.org.bs. The day after the show's aired, you can click on the education menu and scroll down to the Blank Canvas link, and it will take you to all of the archived shows since we've been archiving them on our own. And you got a picture there and a description of the show. So if you just missed the last 15 minutes and you want to go back and hear that, you can do that. So www.nagb.org.bs. I have Holly Bino in the studio with me. Holly, as many of you know, is the chief curator at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and Jeffrey Maris out of Mason's Edition, whoop whoop 242, who is one of our shooting stars. We have many shooting stars, but he is one of the shooting stars in the Bahamian contemporary art firmament, who went to undergrad at Tyler School of Art in Philadelphia. He got into Tyler based on his Junkanoo portfolio. So, you know, you don't have to have a big, fancy, expensive art education to get into a really awesome college, because that is actually one of the really considered one of the best art, many of the very good art schools in the United States. Mm-hmm. You went there on a scholarship from Life for Key Foundation and some other places.
Yeah.
And then you took some time off, and now you just got the most ridiculous amount of offers from various MA programs. Jeffrey applied to, I know where he applied, because I wrote a lot of the recommendation letters, but you applied to like UCLA, was it UCLA?
UCLA.
School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
UPenn.
UPenn.
Hunter College. Yep. Columbia.
And
Washington University.
Basically, he got offered a place at almost all of those, which is sort of unbelievable. I mean, not unbelievable, because your practice is very interesting, but normally you apply to six colleges hoping you're going to get into two, right? And you got into, you got a some incredible offers from some of them, and you have decided to go with Columbia. And is that not public news? Am I not allowed to say that on the radio?
No, it's fine, because I kind of had like time to, you know, breathe and think about it. But like a month ago, it was like totally stressful, because, you know, like at first it's like, oh my God, I got into six colleges, I feel so good. And then 2 days later, it's
like, I don't know how to decide.
I have to decide, like, how do I do this? Do I go with a lot of money and okay school?
Or do I go
with like rock stars? I mean, like, you know, school. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, money. Like, you know, there's a lot to kind of factor in, and you know, what kind of, it's almost like, I don't know, buying a wedding dress. I don't know.
Perhaps even more important than that, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah,
so you have to
commit
to this thing for the next 2 years and then try to figure out how to hustle to make it work for you.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that prestige. Again, it's like another kind of weight.
It's another burden. Yeah, sure, of course.
And then, of course, the work you'll have to commit yourself to. Yeah. So, you know, congratulations. Yeah. I think that's like phenomenal, getting into the programs, having that kind of offer, and then, you know, wading through the faculty to ensure that, you know, you guys align and that you can make like a credible connection within your practice.
I think that's like one of the things about Columbia that definitely attracted me, like the faculty.
The faculty,
was
sure.
Just
well, Sanford
so
Biggers
amazing.
Is there. Exactly.
Like Sanford Biggers, like he is like a personality within himself. Like, unfortunately for my first year, he won't be there because he just got the American prize in Rome.
Oh, darn.
You know,
darn that Sanford Biggers.
You know, like,
I mean, all of that really just to kind of introduce
you.
I mean, a lot of people listening probably have heard of you because you've come on the show so often when you've been going off to do something. But I just think it's so important for people to realize that these opportunities exist, and they don't exist for, you know, upper middle class kids who went to a fancy school necessarily.
Yeah.
They exist for everybody. And Jeffrey has worked his behind off and has engaged at the highest levels, you know, with his intellect and with his practice, you know, despite, you know, all the difficulties of your upbringing. And I think that's extraordinary. And so, you know, again, it just goes to show that if you, like, put your mind to it and you do the work, because, you know, a lot of people in any career are, like, sitting around saying, when's someone going to come and discover me, or when's someone going to come and help me, or what can you do for me? And rather, you're an example of what can I do for myself? Yeah. I'm just going to get out there, and I'm going to... And you were one of the... You were part of the show in Vienna, because your practice is very performative very often, or it involves engagement with community, and it involves people. And so you came to Vienna, and you did a lovely piece there. And so when this show was then... the idea of the show was brought up, you were on that list. And so actually we have to thank the Ministry of Tourism, who in fact supported the National Art Gallery in being able to fly you out to Germany.
Ooh, tourism, I love you.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Ministry of Tourism. And it's nice to see, you know, that support coming outside of just Ministry of Culture, because I think, again, you know, we could use our cultural industry in so many ways. So that's one of the reasons kind of you went off to stay in Leipzig for 2.5 weeks. We have to thank the Stiftung Federkiel, which is a German art foundation who gave you a studio for free. They were originally going to charge us, but they didn't. Ooh. So thank you to them.
The studio was awesome.
And you went to live in Germany. And again, like, what I just think is so extraordinary is basically I called you up and I was like, so Jeffrey, do you need anything else aside from the plane ticket? Like, I don't know. You know, the National Art Gallery can't give you per diem. And you were like, yeah, don't worry about it, man. I'm just going to, you know, you just got on the plane with like no materials. And you're just like, I'm going to make it work. I'm going to do it. There was no like, oh, I need this and I need that. And, you know, I can't go unless, you know, and you went. And tell us a little bit about the work you did and the artists you met there, because Holly spoke to that you were able to engage with some.
Yeah, so I think when we originally talked about this, you were thinking from a very social kind of lens. And I got to Leipzig and I'm like, no, this is not going to work because, like, it's a totally different dynamic.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, even the way the space felt, you know, the space felt like it needed, you know, it needed an object. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, the context that I was working within. So me and Uli kind of met.
Uli's my husband, by the way, Uli, for anyone that doesn't know, who also happens to be, have been in the art business for like 30 years, so.
Just so me and Uli
just met, as an aside,
and we've kind of had like these ongoing conversations about like, you know, how to kind of tie in this conversation of the Leipzig and like this Bohemian idea and how to kind of, you know, how to court with Cuba and how to bring all these things together in a very cohesive way. And Uli, like, he told me about like this banana revolution, and mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, that's super interesting, you know, because like,
you mean the art banana?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, that was actually started in Cologne, I think. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if anyone listening that remembers the it was an album cover for the Velvet Underground with a banana on it that Andy Warhol made. And there was this guy in Germany who decided that he would be the sort of arbiter of what was really authentic, sort of cutting edge practice. And so he went around, started in Cologne, but then he started traveling to all these different German cities. And he felt that if you were engaging culture at this level that he felt was, you know, of value, he would spray paint the Velvet Underground banana on the outside of your building. Mm-hmm. And so it became this kind of underground code for where are the great places, where are the, I would actually love somebody to come here and spray a banana on the National Art Gallery.
Yeah, I mean but even broader than just like I think his name is Thomas, I can't pronounce the last name, so I'll just leave it as Thomas. And in 89, before the fall of the Berlin Wall, the banana kind of became like the symbol of revolution, liberation, you know, the new world meets the old world, East meets West. And because at the time, East Germany was like the GDR and they didn't have access.
Thomas Baumgärtel.
There you go. and so the banana kind of became like this like symbol of the revolution. And, you know, it also kind of was this thing about longing, you know. Longing for the exotic, mm-hmm. longing for something that, you know, that's kind of distant that you can't really reach. That's why I thought it was really
interesting. Bananas had this really weird, like, you know, during the war and post-war, bananas were the symbol of rationing in a way. You couldn't get bananas. There was mm-hmm. this very famous English mm-hmm. war song, Yes, We Have No Bananas. Mm-hmm. So banana became became a symbol of longing also sort of for that. It represented the exotic, but also this having to live without something. Mm-hmm.
Right, so I thought it was so interesting, you know, especially considering like my practice as a whole, where I'm interested in like these different economies, and
I think the banana as like a symbol, well, a Caribbean symbol, right? It's something that we exported to the UK for mm-hmm. what, like 40 years before NAFTA came in and sort of crippled our economy, but. You know, bananas as a staple, mm-hmm. yeah. bananas as something that we have in our everyday life, bananas part of the landscape, banana as part of the way in which we think about our sugar content. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think was the undercurrent for how I was thinking about your project in relation to sugar, black bodies, exhaustion, the mm-hmm. landscape,
and also energy, you know, and how that kind of like relates to both Cuba and the Bahamas mm-hmm. and now Germany. And so what I decided to do is I wanted to use the banana in like this kind of dematerialized way because I didn't want it to, you know, come off as too hokey pokey.
Yeah, well, and the banana is also like a signifier of many other things, and you probably don't want to have that kind of confusion as well.
Yeah.
So a very elegant way of putting it.
Yes.
Thank you. And so what I ended up doing was I kind of became a chef in residence, and a chef. Yeah,
I love how you use that term.
You know, I basically like I cooked the bananas into like these brick forms, and I created like this 72-inch long by maybe 40 inches wide kind of brick wall that kind of, you know, it laid horizontally because I like the way that it kind of became like this horizon, and this it functioned as a pathway, you know, because mm-hmm. I didn't want to build a wall, you know. There's so much kind of political rhetoric around that.
Within the actual space of the Halle itself, I mean, it's already so like industrial and like cold and brick laden, and you know the facade, the inside, the mm-hmm. internal space is kind of very raw, very
bare. Because actually
so
we should describe it, and interestingly the place itself has a very interesting history because it's a red brick building, but it mm-hmm. was a factory, so it's a huge building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cotton.
And it's actually called the Baumwollspinnerei. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes. And Baumwoll means tree wool, literally. Mm-hmm. So it's the tree wool spinner. Mm-hmm. And it was a cotton producing mm-hmm. factory mm-hmm. In the Industrial Revolution, and of course as the cotton industry left, you know, again there's so many parallels there between the Caribbean mm-hmm. and between the north mm-hmm. of England and you know the cotton industry mm-hmm. and between and then when that sort of fell, the cotton milling industry. And Leipzig was, of course, we should mention, Leipzig was behind the wall, right? Leipzig mm-hmm. was in East
Part
Germany,
of East Germany. Yes.
So
yeah.
It was of course not developed at all mm-hmm. and you know even now it's not developed, so it's still extremely historical. And but the city decided to turn that into an art district, and what that has done for their economy mm-hmm. is absolutely extraordinary, because Leipzig, let me tell you, 20 years ago no one knew where on earth Leipzig was. It's 40 minutes from Berlin, and now Leipzig is actually giving Berlin a real run for its money.
It's funny because
it's
like you could be like anywhere in Leipzig mm-hmm. and yeah. just say Spinnerei.
Yeah Spinnerei, like, everybody knows where the Spinnerei is. And there's this weekend, and that's why we actually wanted to open the show at this time, because the May weekend people fly in from all over the world mm-hmm. to go to the Galerie Rundgang, which is the opening of all the galleries and all the art spaces mm-hmm. in this enormous place. You know, I've been there, and first of all, they get 6,000 visitors a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's insane. Yeah. And you're running into people from California. You're running into people from New York. You're running into dealers from like all over the world and collectors. And they did that with culture by dedicating a building to culture. So, you know, just a little shout out to what we could do. Yeah.
For me, that was the thing that struck me the most, because it's a cold space. It's a space that if I see it from the outside, I would think nothing of it.
Mm-hmm.
But to understand that someone made a decision to pump all of this capital into it to make it a profitable space mm-hmm. for artists.
Exactly.
And to know that it's populated. Mm-hmm. It is like it's a
oh, it's full. It's
full-time,
it's like
24/7. Space
artists
that
living there, galleries operating there. But I just wanted mm-hmm. to speak to the building mm-hmm. also, to talk about the bricks mm-hmm. and how that connects to then mm-hmm. Jeffrey's piece, because this creation of this kind of brick, these banana brick walls, and it also sort of connects somehow to the building itself mm-hmm. in a sort of architectural way.
I thought again, going back to like this idea of labor,
mm-hmm.
I thought there was something very interesting also about like the process of actually making the actual bricks, you know, because like I'm formally trained as a ceramicist, so that kind of leads back to like this ceramic process of like mm-hmm. high heat and then like slow cooling,
mm-hmm.
which again kind of like mirrors the actual making of mm-hmm. bricks, because it's like quite similar. It's just like mud kind of heated and cooled very slowly.
Could you tell us about the contents? Because I think the contents very interesting.
Sorry?
The content of the brick.
So the bricks were made of bananas and pretty much sawdust and kind of compressed and then fired. You let it cool for like sorry, you heat it on a radiator for about 7 hours.
And so it was like student life cooking, like heating things on your radiator. Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
When I went into Jeffrey's studio, it smelled like pungent, sweet saccharin, kind of. Like, you couldn't be there for a long time, unless you're accustomed, of course.
No. And that's the
interesting
thing.
Studio resident is going to be like, what was going on here?
And that's the interesting thing. Like, I think another very interesting layer of the work happened actually inside the studio, like the actual residue that the sculpture created.
Yeah, I saw you actually were sort of doing drawings with that. Anyway, we have to quickly go to another short break, but we'll carry on to speak about that after the break. So you were just hearing from Jeffrey Merris, who was an artist that was supported by the Ministry of Tourism and the National Art Gallery to go to a residency in Leipzig, Germany, in this large art space, where also there's an art exhibition, which is going to be on until the 2nd of August, called Übersee, or Overseas, Cuba and the Bahamas, Art from the Caribbean. That was co-curated by our own chief curator, Holly Bino, with the Cuban curator known as Tunel, and we're speaking about that experience, and we should probably also after the break talk about some of the other artists as well that were in that show. Mm-hmm. But we have, I think, 25 artists?
20
mm-hmm. in the show, so it's really a fantastic thing for the Bahamas to be having such a great showing overseas. Pun intended. We're going to carry on speaking to Holly and Jeffrey after the break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after the break.